The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Looking for some amazing TV to stream? Indulge yourself with the hits on Hulu you can't miss. Dive in with Barney, Ted, Robin, and the gang on How I Met Your Mother. All 9 seasons are now streaming on Hulu. Then you can move to Modern Family, Schitt's Creek, and My Wife and Kids. We're talking every episode and every season of these shows. We're talking huge hits, streaming on Hulu whenever you're in the mood. Now we're talking.
I do. I'm the toughest guy. Boston Strong, baby. Let's go!
Ladies and gentlemen, your winner, Charles Boston Strong Rosa.
Oh, there it is! It's all over! Dan Hardy wins tonight!
And the Outlaw Hardy!
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. Matt and I are still on Skype gazing at each other. We have Dan Hardy today. We haven't talked to Dan in a long time, and Charles Rosa is calling in as per Matt's request. We talked to Bryce Mitchell, and they're fighting on this May 9th card, and we had requested, Matt had demanded that we get Charles Rosa on the show. And Matt, when you demand something, they jump.
I was going to say, Jimmy, you said I was asking about it. I didn't ask.
No.
I did not ask. I said, get Charles Rosa on the next show, and bang, here he is. Yep. I made it here at the Sarah household. Well, not the whole household, with me.
Sure.
On my laptop. I made it a Charles Rosa morning, and you I did. Watched 3 of his fights. Yeah, well, I liked his last fight with Manny Bermudez.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, I remember he fought Kyle Bochniak back in the day.
Yeah,
let me watch that. That was fun. And then I watched his fight with Yair Rodriguez, which was off the hook, man. That was a close-ass fight. That was a close fight. And again, that was a few years back. I'd have to see how many. Maybe am I going to say 5 years ago? Or is that too?
I think that's a little long. He was out for a while. How long was he out for?
I'm going to tell you right now.
2 years? Wasn't he out for, let me see. He took a hiatus for a while.
I might be off with that. When did he fight Yair Rodriguez?
You know what, Matt? You're 2015. You're right. I'm looking at it right now. You're correct. It's 5 years ago. It just doesn't seem that long ago.
Come on, man.
You're right.
Why do I give myself a lot of credit, but I literally just watched the show. I just watched the fight. So I knew it was around that. I don't remember the date on it, but that's good. It was 5 years ago. It's amazing, man. Rose has been around, and he's got a lot of experience, but Bryce Mitchell is, you know what he reminds me of? Let's say Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn became an MMA fighter.
Yeah.
Doesn't he? Can't you picture him with the straw, like a little Tom Sawyer guy?
Bryce is funny because he's so polite. Until he talks about fighting, he's like, well, yes, sir, I sure do enjoy fighting. But then I heard that piece of shit say something about me, and I'm going to choke him until he dies. It's funny to watch him get pissed off because he's such a nice dude.
He says it just like that. He's like, it reminds me. I can't do the accent. I can't even pretend to do the accent. It would be embarrassing and cringy. But he did say that it reminds him when he was on the bus getting bullied or something, right?
Yeah,
dude,
yeah.
That stuff stays with you.
Yeah,
Jimmy.
He doesn't like that at all. It feels like bullying, and he's one of those guys who does. I mean, nobody likes bullying unless you're a bully, but he just does not take well to someone talking shit like that.
You know what's strange about that, Jimmy? And it's not good bullying. I hate bullies. Hate them. But part of it is because when I was in seventh grade, I used to get fucked with, and I used to get bullied a little bit, and it definitely stuck with me. It got me to the point where I hate it so much that it made me into, like, you know, I mean, listen, sometimes you say that all heroes don't wear capes, and I'm kind of like a little superhero. If I see something wrong and I step in.
Sure.
Jimmy, you never said that.
I've implied it.
Okay, you did it.
Like, when you say it, I'll always go, yeah. Like, so that kind of is like me saying it.
Well, part of my hatred for bullies is because I was fucked with. So the point is, let's say I was never fucked with.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as good for anybody I come in contact with, because I am a gentle alpha and I look out for the weak.
That's right.
I mean, would I be that same guy if I did not get fucked with, Jimmy? I know it's a deep question for the beginning of the show.
You might not. I mean, it makes look. I mean, I do comedy because that was my way of not getting beaten up. I was funny. It was my way of getting girls to talk to me because it was the only thing I had going for me. So a lot of guys who learn to fight do it because you're getting your ass kicked and, hey, I'm going to respond by fighting. I wasn't tough enough to fight. And I figured I could make an asshole out of myself and get the same response, which is to be left alone.
You took up comedy and I took up the defensive arts.
Yeah, I would prefer to take the defensive art. If I could go back and redo it again, I would just learn to fight and do jokes. I would do both. I mean, I keep thinking, hey, I could have started in 1991 when I started, 1990 when I started comedy, and I'd be really good by now.
But you know what they say, Jimmy?
What?
Something. Well, I forgot the exact saying, so I don't know what they say. But they do. They know. It's never too late. That's
they what say that, but they're lying.
They don't say that.
Yeah, they do.
And it is true, because you... As you know, I found out, you didn't really tell me, you trained with the great Jimmy Rivera at Tiger yes, Schultz in New York. Right. And you were just coming into just starting to really love it.
That's okay. Yeah, I'll go back.
All right. Maybe I'm overselling it.
No, I'm saying I'll go back as soon as we can. Lyman Good tested positive for COVID too, but I hadn't gone to that one. That was on the West Side. And I imagine some fighters are going to pop up with it. It's, you know, it is what it is.
I heard he's doing well, from what I heard.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to be fine. His immune system is probably great. He's very healthy. But I'm still going to go back. It's not going to stop me from going and training. Even if I was in that gym, I'd still go back.
But you said that you went to comedy with the whole bullying thing, and it got you out of, you know, it kept you from getting bullied, and you should have did the martial arts. You're late to the game to the martial arts, but you did get to it. So that, listen, you never know, not that you're looking for trouble, but you never know what could happen in the future, Jimmy.
It's a great world,
you know? Me, I'm late to the game with the jokes. And I can't.
Nah, you always had the jokes.
Oh, Jimmy, could you be my sensei? Maybe
with your comedy sensei? Thing.
Please, Jimmy, I'll be your Padawan. That's nothing freaky. That's from the Jedi, and the Jedi is the Jedi, and then there's the Padawan. And the Padawan is like the apprentice.
Oh, I don't know I never heard of that.
Well, maybe you should watch a fucking Star Wars or two. I'm sorry. That's not the way. This is the way.
This is the way.
You know what that is?
Star Trek.
The Mandalorian.
Oh.
That you do not watch. I'm not saying you're too cool, but you don't give it a shot. Your buddy Bill Burr was... You know what I've been doing, Jimmy? I've been watching shit I like, because there's only so much new shit.
Sure.
And when I want to play it safe, I put on some episodes of The Mandalorian. And one in particular I like, one episode, is, I forgot the name of it, but it's with your buddy Bill Burr in it.
Yeah, I hear he's great in it.
It's like a heist. Like, they have to go rescue a criminal that's in a prison, so they got to break him out of prison. It's cool, man. You with Jimmy. If you watch that one episode, you go, you know what? This is fucking cool. Maybe you won't say it.
Baby Yoda would show up. Baby Yoda would show up.
That's
fucking ears. Yoda.
And it's not they say Baby Yoda, but you know it's not actually Yoda.
Oh, I thought it was.
Well, this is to see. You know? That is not the way.
Oh.
They say this is the way. That's the Mandalorian's creed.
Oh, okay. Why don't you watch Star Trek? Come on, you can live long.
I can never do that fucking thing with the fucking...
I can't either. I can't. I have to cheat and take one and open it like that. It's awful.
I never liked the Star Trek. Even their phases I thought was stupid. Give them a regular fucking handgun. They got those little fucking remote controls they're shooting each other with. Go fuck yourself.
But it's a foreseeable future, though.
Hey, some people like Spock. Some people like Chewbacca. You understand? A lot of people don't like both.
No, but Chewbacca was kind of stupid compared to Spock. Spock was at least bright. That's not logical, Captain. Chewbacca's like...
Spock was kind of cool. All right, I'm not lying. Spock, you know, little human, little Vulcan. I understand.
Chewbacca makes noise.
But that means to make Spock a human had to F a Vulcan, a girl. I don't know who was which. I forgot. I don't
remember. I've heard the story, and I blocked it out immediately.
Listen, How do you think a Vulcan is in bed? They show no emotion.
Tireless. Exactly.
They might be like efficient.
Yeah. I'm coming. Why'd you stop moving? I came all over the place. Boy, was it good.
Holy shit, I'm lighted. You got to stop with that.
Yeah, I imagine they're not very good in bed.
Hold on a second. All right, let's get off. Because a Vulcan cannot be good in bed. There's no way.
They're probably very good. They're just not emotional.
Yeah, but that's a lot of it, you know?
No.
No?
The physical. No, they just probably get in there and pump away.
So anyway, we got Dan Hardy on the show.
Yeah, we do.
Dude, he fucking killed me.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Looking for some amazing TV to stream? Indulge yourself with the hits on Hulu you can't miss. Dive in with Barney, Ted, Robin, and the gang on How I Met Your Mother. All 9 seasons are now streaming on Hulu. Then you can move to Modern Family, Schitt's Creek, and My Wife and Kids. We're talking every episode and every season of these shows. We're talking huge hits, streaming on Hulu whenever you're in the mood. Now we're talking.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up?
My man.
I'm so happy to talk to you.
Thanks, man. I'm also happy to talk to you. I'm a huge fan of yours, man.
Ah, you're the best. Listen, I was just talking to your coach slash sensei, Charles McCarthy.
Yep. I just left him. I was just training with him. So,
how close are you with Charles McCarthy? Has he been with you whole career or part of your career? Or
yeah, my entire career. I moved down to Florida when I was 22 years old, and I was looking for a boxing gym and I rode my bike into it. At the time, I didn't have a car when I first moved down here. I accidentally rode my bike, what I thought was a boxing gym, but it was Charles McCarthy's American Top Team in Boca Raton, Florida. And man, the rest is history. I fell in love with it that day.
Why Florida?
I'm pretty much after college, I had a lot of struggles, man. You know, I lost my two older brothers, Dominic and Vincent, when I was 16 and 17 years old. I lost them to accidental drug overdoses. After that, man, life was tough. I was able to graduate college. I graduated from college with a degree in culinary arts as a chef. And then I moved to Florida, kind of get a fresh start, you know what I'm saying? Because, Boston, the life was tough for me, tough people around me. So I just wanted a fresh start. And, luckily I did that. I was able to get a job as a chef. But, being a chef wasn't cutting it for me. After playing hockey my whole life and I was competitive, I needed something else. And there's no hockey in Florida, so I was missing that. And, I figured I'd pick up boxing because my Uncle Tommy was a boxer, Tom the Bomb Rosa. And, I rode my bike into a gym, American Top Team in Boca Raton. I met Charles McCarthy, and ever since then, man, the rest is history. And he's been my mentor since.
That is amazing. I love Ricardo Laborio because he's under – Charles is under Ricardo?
Yeah, Charles is a black belt under Ricardo Laborio. I actually got my black belt under Ricardo Laborio. Charles McCarthy was right next to him when he gave it, so I say I have a black belt under Charles McCarthy, Ricardo Laborio, and it's the two of the best, man.
And for people that don't know, Charles McCarthy was on season 4 with me of The Ultimate Fighter. So I spent a lot of time with Charles. And on The Ultimate Fighter, as people know, there's nothing to do. So you're just hanging out with the guys. There's no TV. There's no outlet. You can't leave. So I spent 6 weeks with Charles. So even if I don't talk to the guy for a while, which I just spoke to him the other day, when we see each other, it's almost like, I don't know. You went through that experience with each other, you know? So when I see you guys, I ran into you guys in Boston when you had your win. That was with your Manny, with the fight with Manny, no?
Yeah, it was a big win for me. Performance tonight, first round Namboss, so I was super pumped, and to have him, with me there, obviously it was a real special night,
Now, you looked like you were in a lot of trouble in that fight too. At one point, I mean, you're so dangerous off your back. He was dropping elbows, and it looked like you kept going for the arm, and he kept pulling free. Did you know you were going to wind up securing that? Because right before you grabbed him, they're saying, "Well, he's got to put his legs around the waist." Like they were kind of saying that you should be trying to get out and push off, as opposed to wrapping your legs around his neck.
Yeah, Daniel Cormier called me after and apologized for that. He's like, man, I'm sorry about that. He's talking trash, you know, he's talking trash. And I was like, well, man, it's just because you don't know jiu-jitsu. You know what I'm saying? You're a wrestler. But he said, we had a good laugh about it. I was just messing with him. But, nah, man, you know, I mean, obviously it's not where you want to start the fight off. You know, I threw a kick and I, you know, missed it a little bit, traveled up his hip. And, you know, when you catch the foot on the hip and you get kind of tree-topped, and I was on my back, and yeah, man, he's a beast. I mean, he's really, obviously, it's the beginning of the fight, beginning of the round. He has all of his strength. He had my back up against the cage. But, man, that's, like, my best position. If someone puts me on their back in the gym, they get submitted, and everybody knows that. So, you know, that's – I mean, you can ask any of my training partners. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's what it is. I mean, I definitely don't ever put myself on my back, don't want to be there. Charles McCarthy freaks out and yells at me and tells me to get off my back. You know, he's like, you do, you know, that's not anything I try to put in my game. You know, that's always last resort stuff. So that was my last resort, man. You know, I was eating elbows, so I had to go for it.
Now, that was a verbal tap. Now, did you feel it? Did you feel it pop? I mean, a lot of times it's like at least four pops before it's done.
The thing is, I've popped almost every UFC fight. I've popped something on somebody. I mean, I fought Dennis Seaver. I popped his knee, fought right through it. You know, I fought, you know, Sean Soriano, popped his arm, we fought through it, I ended up choking him out later, but even Yair Rodriguez, I've had him a couple moves and was able to pop some stuff, but nobody taps, and then him, I just, boom, I locked it on, and I actually asked him, I got even a video on my phone, because I think someone was recording, and they sent it to me later, a fan or something, but I'm like, man, like, I didn't even feel you tap, like, what was it? He's like, man, that was just so deep that I felt your cuff, like, right under my elbow, and he goes, my arm would have broken half, he goes, so I just screamed, and I was like, all right. You know, I asked him because I was curious. I'm like, that was pretty quick, you know, and it's what it is.
It looked quick, but maybe he's been there before. Maybe he's had his elbow pop before. Well, maybe it was just a reaction. You know.
Yeah, you see Anthony Pettis and Henderson, that kind of was like that. You see that fight when he tapped? I think it was Benson Henderson, Pettis.
They fought a couple of times, though.
Yeah, he armbarred him one time, didn't he? Or maybe Pettis armbarred somebody else, but it was. I just remember, like, they tapped real quick, and it's just part of what it is, you know?
You know, part of the reason why I'm really excited about your fight with Bryce Mitchell is you guys both show tremendous composure under really shitty circumstances. That fight with Yair Rodriguez was a barn burner, and it basically started with you in a triangle. I mean, right away he got – it's one of those things where there's fights, there's certain fights where it's like something goes wrong, and it's almost like starting from the shittiest position. So – I remember a Uriah Faber fight where the guy went for something and the guy ended up just mounted, a great jiu-jitsu guy. He ended up getting out and winning, but it's something similar to that. You were in a tight triangle. It wasn't close. You kept your elbow on the proper side of the hip. If it went across, it's usually lights out. How tight was that triangle and what were you thinking? That was your first... Correct me. Was that your first UFC fight?
It was my third UFC.
I'm way off.
UFC fight was on 4 days' notice against number 10 ranked Dennis Seaver. So I flew across the country to fight.
That was your first UFC fight? Was it a Seaver fight?
Yeah, he was number 10 in the world, and I fought Fight of the Night against him. It was a badass fight. If you watch that, I don't know if you've seen that, but
it was Fight of the Night.
That's like one of my favorite. And then I went back, submitted Sean Soriano, came from there, fought Yair Rodriguez, lost this bullshit split decision to him. I mean, I thought I whooped his ass. I was finishing the fight, elbowing him in the face, and it's, you know, up against the cage. But, you know, it is what it is. Split decision, lost him fighting in his hometown, Mexico City. Come back, 30-27, Kyle Boshniak, one of the toughest kids I ever fought in my life. The kid's a fucking monster. You should see when he fought Zabit, you know.
I point that out a lot.
The kid's nails, dude. I was hitting him with everything. His face was destroyed. His leg was black and blue, but... And then, you know, I came back against Shane Burgos, and I was up 2-0 against him. He caught me with a good shot. I was on my feet swinging back, and I thought the ref prematurely jumped in. I mean, I was there. The second he grabbed me, I was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? So I don't like to make excuses and nothing like that. And I mean, also, that was fight of the night. So my three losses in the UFC are all fight of the night bonuses. I've never had a bad performance. I always go out there and perform. And a little bit of bad luck, and I think the time's going to turn, you know, where, you know, maybe the ref doesn't jump in early in the fight. I mean, that's how Frankie Edgar became one of the greatest fighters of all time, is because they didn't stop the fight against Maynard, you know. And it sucks, you know. I didn't get that luck of the draw, but I don't make excuses. I just go out there and I do the best I can, and I perform every time.
You know, I'm sorry, Jimmy. Even this morning, I watched three of the fights. And that Yair Rodriguez fight, shit, man, dude, I mean – that was a fucking brutal. I mean, I could see where you could have a problem with that decision. You know what I mean?
It depends how you score. If you like that, if you like top control on the ground, if you think elbows and strikes are more effective than, you know, little jabs and, you know, inside kicks or what, you know, it depends what you think, you know. But
why I one of the reasons I wanted you on here is because if you look at your record, and there's a lot of guys, and this is true to MMA, because a lot of records, Jimmy, here, like his record's 3-3 in the UFC, correct?
Right.
Yeah, 3-3 in the UFC.
You don't seem like a batting 500 fighter here. Like, you should be talked about more, because of these losses, 10 days notice with Dennis Seaver.
4 days notice.
Well, what the fuck am I saying? I'm awful. But short notice, very short notice. No, did you have a camp at all? Were you training for anything?
I mean, I'm always training. There's never a time to train. I mean, I don't think I've, you know, besides being injured, I'm always in training, you know, working hard, stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, it was the only thing that was tough about that, I had to cut 33 pounds in 4 days. Luckily, I did, because I wouldn't have got performance. I wouldn't have got fight of the night and bonus if I didn't make the weight. So, it was, you know.
Now, Bryce Mitchell, you know, people are talking about Bryce, you know, for what it is. Yeah. So, I mean, Bryce, is first of all, And rightfully so for the kid, you know what I mean? He's a tough-ass kid, a likable kid, and he pulled off that twister, which got a lot – I mean, that spiked up his popularity, which he was already on people's radar.
Yes, mission of the year, yeah.
Yeah. So now with this, you're looking at him. What is it you want – and I always get the shine and the shade. You don't want the shade. The shade's bad. You want the shine. You want the smoke. Somebody, hold on, Charles, I fuck this up all the time. Somebody DM'd me. A guy DM'd me, he goes, hey, Matt, man, I got to help you out with the whole shade and the smoke thing. Yeah, so I'm going to read that. But you want to be talked about taking out Bryce Mitchell. Is this the fight? Is this the coming out party for the fans? We already know you. But for everybody, is this the coming out party now?
Yeah, I mean, if the whole world doesn't know who I am now, they're definitely going to know, you know, after my fight May 9th. I don't think there's any doubt in that. I mean, I had an amazing performance in my last fight, first round armbar over a top guy that I was the underdog against. Everyone said Manny Bermudez had the best jiu-jitsu in the world. And then, you know, this Bryce Mitchell fight. Yeah, the kid's a young, super talented, hungry, undefeated kid coming in 3-0 in the UFC, coming off submission of the year. And, man, these are the guys that I want. I want the top guys. I want to be fighting the best guys in the world. I've already fought all the best. You know, I've already fought 3 top 10 guys in my career. And those are – you watch all those fights, they're all fighting tonight. They're all fucking wars, you know. So I know where my level's at. But that was also 3 or 4 years ago. You know, I didn't start in this game. Like I said, when I came into Charles McCarthy's gym, I was 23 years old. I was a hockey player. I was just – you know what I'm saying? I was just a kid. I didn't have any former background with martial arts. Just an athlete playing hockey. Tough kid. Got in a lot of fights and hockey games and stuff like that. But, man, my skill level – like, I think about myself coming to the UFC 4 years ago with Dennis Seaver, and I think of myself now, and it's a completely different animal. And, you know, that's the facts behind it. So I'm excited. I think this is where I should have been when I got in the UFC, like at this level, and I would have went right to the title. And that's where I'm at now.
You really got Bryce upset, too, because we had him on, and he said, yeah, we had already signed for the fight. We were all good. And then he's saying he's going to break my arm off and fuck it. He was really fuming. So you really pissed him off if that was your intention.
Yeah, man. Well, what's going to happen? I'm not his friend coming into this fight. He's going to get his arm broken. So, you know, I wrote a comment like someone said, oh, yeah, and he, you know, you better get some, you know, Reebok camo shorts or something. I said, you better get him a camo sling, too, because he's going to need that after I break his arm. And that's, you know, how I feel. I mean, this is war for me. I'm not going in there to be his friend. I mean, after, you know, if the fight earns my respect, after the fight's over, it's one thing. But as far as what it is right now, man, I mean, I'm going there to take his head off. I'm sure he's going to be doing mine. And, you know, there's no love between me and him right now. And, you know, I don't have any respect towards him right now until, you know, he earns it. And he has.
Do you need that going into a fight? Like, some guys need to dislike somebody. And some guys, like, you know, Sam Alvey doesn't care. He could fight his brother. Like, some guys just don't give a shit. And some guys need a little animosity.
Yeah, I mean, I need something, you know. Sometimes everyone always asks me, like, why do you look so mean? You go in there. And it's because, man, I mean, I am willing to die when I go in the octagon. Everyone has a different thing, but when I step in that octagon, like I mean, I'm willing to die in there. So when I step foot in there, it's war for me. And that's how I have to think about it. And that's how I go into it, you know, and maybe that's the reason. So people say, oh, so you're not scared or something like that, but that's my way of going in there. And that's how I walk in there with supreme confidence.
And let me tell you, Jimmy, I want you to, after this interview, we're talking, see how nice and polite this kid is, you know,
yep.
Watch his walkout in Mexico City versus Yair Rodriguez. Holy shit, Jimmy. You think I get hyped up on my espresso? I love Charles. And the fight lived up to that fucking walkout. Because sometimes guys walk out and they're fucking – and it's like, oh, this is going to be great. And then it's a dud. Dude, the fight lived up to the walkout, and the walkout got me fired up. Like, so what was the feeling walking out with Yair Rodriguez? I know it was 5 years ago, dude, but shit, dude, you were in the zone, man. How were you feeling with that?
That was a crazy one, man. I remember I had the American flag at Run Mexico City, of course. So there's 30,000 Mexican fans, you know, cheering against me. So, yeah, there's 35,000 fans cheering against me. We're standing under the tunnel. And I remember Charles McCarthy is next to me in the tunnel. And I some Mexican guys tried to pour beer. They poured beer on me. So I got beer on. They're trying to pour it on me from up top. You know what I'm saying? Like the top part of the balcony. Yeah. And Charles McCarthy tries to jump up and like rip the guy off the balcony because, you know, he's trying to protect me. So I'm already fired up, but that just got me more fired up. Like, I'm going to F this kid up so bad, dude. Like, you know, all these, and I didn't even know what they were saying. They're screaming at me in Spanish, but I knew they weren't saying good things. And, you know, that kind of got me a little bit extra hype, but it doesn't matter, man. You know, I have tunnel vision when I walk out there, and I have the same thing. Like, when I'm going in there, like, not, you know, like I said, I mean, you can tell, talk to me. Everyone says I'm a nice guy, but there's a switch that I do that I flip, you know, when I flip the switch, like it's on, you know, and I get tunnel vision. I don't see anything. I just look at my opponent and I'm looking at him like that's all I see. And, you know, I do that Mike Tyson thing. Like I remember watching that video when I was like maybe, you know, 13, 14 years old about how he looks for the twitch in their eye. I literally do that. Like I don't take my eyes off him and I'm going, and that's just gives me my full confidence, you know.
And so when you were a kid, did that start when you were a kid? I mean, if you had two older brothers, you know, most guys that have two older brothers get their asses kicked by their older brothers. Is that where that kind of started?
Sure. Oh, yeah, for sure, man. I was, my whole friggin' childhood was grew up me just trying to get away from my brothers whooping my ass. But, you know, luckily I have two younger brothers too, Lucas and Francis. My brother Lucas, Rosa, just moved down from Boston. And also I have a sister, Teresa. But my brother Lucas just moved down from Boston. You know, he's from New Hampshire. He's a state champion wrestler in New Hampshire. So he wants to pursue this fighting thing full time. So that's pretty cool. So, you know, I really like to think I come from a fight family. If you ever meet my dad, you can tell he's a bruiser himself. He's a beast of a man. And, you know, my Uncle Tom the Bomb Rosa, you know, over 200 boxing fights. So I just, you know, it's pretty cool.
So yeah, you're also, sorry, Matt, you're also a chef too, which I'm fascinated with because we've talked to a lot of guys that do a lot of different jobs, like, you know, but a lot of times they're bouncers or I don't think I've talked to a professional chef who's a fighter yet. What made you go into that?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I wanted. That's what I do. That's what I went to school for. I got my degree in culinary arts. I graduated from Johnson & Wales and, in Providence, Rhode Island, but pretty much after high school, like, you know, you have a meeting with the guidance counselor at the end when I went to high school in Boston, and they're like, you know, what do you want to do after high school? And I'm like, I don't know, I want to play hockey. And they were like, well, you can't play hockey. And I'm like, well, why not? I want to be in the NHL. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just kind of I wasn't the best hockey player in the world, but I was like, that's what I wanted to do. And they're like, well, what else do you like to do? And kind of sarcastically, I was like, well, I like to eat. I love food. I come from a large Italian family. Like, my mom and dad have each have eight brothers and sisters. So ever since I was a little kid, I can remember rolling meatballs in the kitchen with my dad and my mom. So that's how I grew up. So I always was cooking, always eating, like always food on the table, you know? And so I loved cooking. So I was like, oh, I love eating. And then the lady was like, oh, I kind of said it like sarcastic, but she was like, oh, why don't you go to the school, Johnson & Wales, that has a hockey team and they have a culinary program. And I was like, hey, best of both worlds. So that's what I did. And I, you know, luckily was able to pull out of it, graduate. Through a lot of shit, but, you know, and I'm happy I did because it helps a lot with my fight diet and my nutrition and all that stuff.
All right.
You know, I ended up getting a great job down here. I worked at a 5-star restaurant, like Cut 432, a 5-star steakhouse in South Florida. Was like, you know, it's like a real restaurant. And then I learned how to cook there too. So it's my other passion, but fighting is my number one, you know.
Nothing better than a good steak. Like, you know, I've gone to, like, you ever go to a Michelin place and some of them are great. Oh. Then they have these weird, this is an egg with cinnamon. Fuck you. Like, it's just not good.
Well, it's all quality, man. That's what people always like. Oh, man, like people having come over. Like, I've been to different places. You know, I've even been to, Wonder Boy's house. I went over there, lived at his house for a little while. I cooked them a shrimp scampi dinner. You can ask, you know, Ray Thompson or them about that. I, you know, amazing family they are and stuff like that. But, you know, I went there and cooked for them and stuff like that. But sometimes I'll go to like my friends' houses and they're like, hey, man, you got to cook. You're a chef. Like, what can you make? And I'm like, all right, well, what do you want to make? And then I look in the cabinet and they get like mac and cheese and like canned tuna. I'm like, bro, I can't do anything with this. Like, you need fresh ingredients. Like, you can't just make magic out of nothing. So there is, you know, I can definitely make things better, but it's all about the fresh ingredients and stuff like that and getting the right stuff.
Were you training with Wonder Boy at the time? You were out there training?
Yeah, that was about 5 or 6 years ago, probably before I was in the UFC. So
I saw some sidekicks. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, yeah, that's where I learned it from. You know, Ray taught me. Ray and Steven, they taught me a lot, man. They were treating me like family. Lived at their house a little bit. I developed their style. I used their style, and you know, I mean, I used it because one time I got dropped in a fight. I won the fight, but it was like I got dropped, and I'm like, man, I got to get rid of this 50-50 fighting. Like, I just come in every time, and if I fight like this 10 times, like, eventually one time you're going to lose, and we can't afford that if I want to be the champion, you know? So, because I was, like, the best amateur in the country. I was fought 20 amateur fights. I was, like, 19. I was, like, 18-0, like, unbelievable record. So, like, one time I got dropped, I got up, and, I won the fight, but I was like, man, like, we can't ever let that happen again. So, at that time, Charles McCarthy was managing Stephen Thompson, and he's like, hey, I got this guy, man. Like, he's the most elusive, like, best stand-up guy in the world. And I was like, a karate guy is the best guy in the world? Bro, I went and trained with Stephen Thompson, and there's no doubt, like, he is the best stand-up guy on the planet Earth, like, you know.
How's Ray Thompson as an instructor? Oh, I can see him being a little stern.
He's a legend. He's a legend, dude. That guy is a legend. Like, you say yes, sir, you call him Mr. T or yes, sir. That's all you know, you respect him like a father right away. Like, he just has that composure, and he's a special dude.
He's good. He's good entertainment, too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we had some fun on the tubs, no doubt.
We had a little thing about Chemo's ponytail.
Right. And you were right, Matt. I watched the fight. You were right.
Well, he thought he got the hair pulled out because it's like an old, like, sail. What is it? Like an old.
Like a bun?
No, he had a top knot, is what he had. Oh. And a lot of people were saying he got pulled out because Hoist, back in the day, you were allowed to pull hair in the UFC. Hoist had it. Well, this is UFC number 3. So, I mean. This is when it was NHB, not MMA, you know?
Yeah.
He had him by the top knot, and he was, like, working him from his guard, Hoist. And people are saying he got pulled out because you saw something black on the mat, but it was the fucking mouthpiece. He's so great. I'm like, remember when you brought that up? He's like, yes. I go, well, I think you were wrong. He's like, you are mistaken. I'm like, oh!
Yeah, you don't mess with Mr. You don't talk back to Mr. T. Not even a kid would do that.
Oh, it's great. It's so great, man. But what else was I going to say?
You were right, but I probably won't tell him that the next time he's on. I'll probably forget about this and just – but I watched the fight right after that interview, and I'm like, yeah, Matt was right. That was a mouthpiece. And they even said there was a mouthpiece on the
so one other thing I was going to – I don't think I saw it yet, but I'll probably go back and watch it because I just subscribed to this podcast thing. But what was Bryce Mitchell saying? He was talking to it or –
Right, he was pissed off that he said he's like I don't know why he's talking. We already had the fight, and he's just talking shit. He said he's gonna break my arm, and it really annoyed him. Like the fact he took that very personal. Oh, here's what he said, right, Matt? He said he felt like it was bullying. He's like it reminded him of when he was younger, and people would talk shit to him, like, so it tapped into something he didn't like.
It was like, why would you tell somebody you don't even know you're gonna break his damn arm? That type of thing.
Well, what are we doing? I mean, what are we doing?
Hey, everybody's got to use. Whatever they need to get themselves mentally straight to get locked in a cage with somebody. Yeah. You understand? That's how I feel. So when I hear, like, my whole attitude was, listen, I have enough friends that could use some enemies. I'm in the fight game. Fuck it. Like, you know what I mean? Because it does suck compared to, like, we talked about this We talked about this with Bryce Mitchell, which was I've had opponents that I liked. Because when you live in a house, it's hard not to like somebody. So yeah, I really ended up – me and Chris Lytle, we got really close.
Yeah, you fought him for the championship, right?
And then I fought him for the – we were both in the house together on the Tough Four. So we fought for the Tough Championship, yeah. So – and it was like a really close, uneventful fight, you know. It was 30-27, two for me, one for him. So it was really weird, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? And it really could have went either way, you know. But then, you know, anyway, what the fuck? Oh, so we got really close. I had to fight him again. Yeah, after that went great. But then I had to fight him again, like, for my last fight. And it just
– different.
Yeah, I lost that one. And that was a better – it was more of a scrap of just throwing – I don't know. I should have went for it. Listen, I should have done my jiu-jitsu. I should have tried. He's not easy to tap, but I should have fucking hit it a takedown, Charles. Learn from my mistakes. But anyway, the point is – I fight a guy like that I really like. You're still competing, and it doesn't make you fight less. But getting there, when you got a guy that you can't lose to, or a guy that says anything, even if you don't know, he says a remark that you don't like, it's like your pride steps in. And it's like, you know what? I'm not fucking losing the Frank Trigg. I'm not losing the fucking Matt Hughes. Yeah. Fuck those guys. Fuck them. Yeah.
Well, that's what I want. I want to bite.
That's the – That's the shit.
The best, angriest Bryce Mitchell I can get. So whatever I got to say to get him there, and you know whatever I do to get myself there, it's now I want the fight that the fans are expecting. You know what I'm saying?
And again, man, he was in that. I watched his fight with Bobby Moffitt, and he was in some tight ass Darce chokes, and that's tough. A fight I really watch if you want to see his mettle, you want to see what he's made of.
Yeah,
and I'm like, all right, this kid, you know, was talks like a nice Southern boy, like polite. But he's got it, man, too. So this fight, when we were gonna have him on, I started going back watching your fights. I'm like, holy fuck, this should be talked about. This fight, you know what I mean? Because the whole card is excellent.
It's the opening fight on the card.
Yeah, we're opening, man. It seems like it's gonna be historical. They're saying it's gonna be the first major sporting event to happen since the pandemic. So I'm really hoping it happens. I'm ready for it to happen, and I'm pretty cool that we're gonna be the first ones on since all this madness, you know?
All right, listen, enough of all this fight stuff. I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
I know you're tight with Charles McCarthy.
My God,
he is a ranked virtual reality Pavlov player. Do you know this about your...
Yeah, dude, well, I didn't even really know it until, the last, year. And he told me, you know, do this, and I'd go over his house, and he put me on his virtual reality thing, and I was like, this is crazy, why don't I have one of these? And it was the coolest thing. I'm like, I can't believe everyone doesn't have one. It's the best thing ever. It's real world. You put it on and you're another planet. But then until recently, the last year, this new restaurant opened up where it's a virtual reality. They have a restaurant and it's a whole thing. And I met all of his teammates and we had dinner together, and they set up all the VR and stuff, and really amazing people. And it was just, they were do you know how good Charles is? He's one of the best in the world. I'm like, are you serious? Yeah, our team won the championship of the whole world in VR. And I was Charles is a humble guy, so he doesn't go around bragging how smart he is and how good he is at VR and how good he is at all this stuff he is. But man, I really think Charles McCarthy is a genius, man. You just don't say it. You know, he's really good. He's an amazing teacher, you know, jiu-jitsu and his VR. For what his teammates were saying, I looked them up. They're all legit.
It's funny.
You must be good at it.
And I was talking to him the other day about it, and he's a humble guy, but again, we're close. Yeah. So he plays the game Pavlov. The geeks are like this, Jimmy. I don't think we're losing people. The geeks right now are getting hard. Listen.
Yeah. But,
so I standout battle royale. That's what I like. It's PUBG. Yeah. He likes more of a Counter-Strike in VR. That's So listen, man, I'm not shitting on his game. So all of a sudden he goes, standout is done. And I go, wait, I thought he meant dope because I thought there was a typo. So he's shitting on my game. Oh, there's more bots than plays. And I go, oh, McCarthy, you better chill, man. And then all of a sudden, you know, I go, look, man, fuck your game. You're on there 2 seconds, you get killed. No strategy. There's no fucking strategy, Charles.
Charles,
there's no strategy.
Yeah.
And he starts arguing with me, no, but you got your squad. They're strategic. Yeah. I go, I'm going to let the world know now. You drop me and Charles McCarthy in a standout battle royale setting. Last man standing. I'm sorry to get dark with you right there.
No, the only way to know is make it happen. So let's do it.
All right. I'm sorry. We're back now. I just had to air that out. We can always cut that out of the interview.
No, we should do it.
No, it's a challenge. It's got to stay in, Matt. You can't cut that.
I like my
buddy. Get it out. Vent it out.
All right. Look, Charles, we're happy you came on, and it was fun talking to you, man. And I'm really, really psyched for this fight. The entire card is amazing, even though Amanda unfortunately dropped out. I mean, Dominic Cruz, to see Dominic fighting again is fantastic. And good luck with it, man. It's a great card, and everybody is going to be watching it, because even people who aren't necessarily UFC fans are probably going to watch it because people are home and they're looking for sports. So there's going to be a lot of eyes on you.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it, man. It's awesome. You know, thanks for having me on the show. Good stuff. I might I just wanted to shout out one thing. I just, you know, if you guys want to follow any of my cooking stuff from my Instagram, you know, it's Charles Rose MMA on Twitter. I post latest fight updates or things that's going on in the fight, and I always got some cooking stuff that I'm doing on there, so you can check that out. And then you can also check out my family's charity, ChuckiesFight.com, a family charity my mom and dad started to help knock out substance abuse. So, you know, my dad goes in the water. He lives up in Boston, freezing cold. He jumps in the freezing cold ocean every morning to help raise money to help knock out substance abuse. So you guys can go in there, donate, or you can just go in there and watch my crazy dad jump in the water when it's snowing every morning. So,
hey, did you avoid, by the way, before we let you go, did you avoid that road because of the road your brothers went down? Did you kind of stay away, or did you almost go down that road, or did that kind of keep you away?
Yeah, I mean, it kept me away a little bit, but I mean, it was tough, man. It wasn't easy because, you know, at that time I was 16 and 17, like those years of your life out, you know, I was a pretty bad kid, but I was able to turn things around and, you know, happy where I'm at now. And I, you know, help a lot of people and, you know, try to be good now. You know what I'm saying?
Good, man.
Let me tell you, Charles, you know, your family, it seems like it's seen a lot of tragedy, but not only the way you fight, the way you carry yourself, I'm sure you're making everybody very proud in your family.
I appreciate that, man.
All right, man. Thanks Charles.
Thanks for coming
out with us, man.
Yeah, good luck in the fight.
Yeah, McCarthy, I'm fucking coming for him in the fucking DR. I'm coming for him. You let him know.
All right, I'll let him know. Later, guys.
All right, Charles.
See you later, man.
Later, buddy. Boston Strong.
What a nice guy.
A nice kid, no?
Yeah, really nice dude. I didn't know he was a chef, too, until today, and I started reading more. What an interesting combination. First of all, women must throw themselves at that dude. You can fight, and you're a chef.
But
and he's good-looking. I have none of those things.
He's a good-looking, well-spoken kid. He's got – and he could cook. He's a fucking badass. And this is one of the things. We have so many fights. Maybe not lately. We're getting back to it, May 9th.
Sure.
I'm looking forward to it with this card. He deserves some attention because, I mean, both him and if you look at his opponent, Bryce Mitchell, it's going to be a great fucking fight. And I just want – it's always better when people know a little bit more about the fighter.
Agree.
You watch this kid's fight. You go to fight UFC Fight Pass and you put in Charles Rosa. You're not going to have a bad fight. I mean, I wanted just to watch the last fight. Then I watched the fight before. And then I ended up watching, like – at least three or four of his fights. So he's really entertaining. And this fight with Bryce Mitchell is a perfect matchup to bring out the best skills in both guys.
But you're right, Matt. When you interview people or you listen to people talk, you get a little invested in them because there's so many fighters, there's so many guys. But when you get to know somebody a little bit or you get to hear them talk and you see what their life is, then you're a little more invested in watching them fight. Whether you like them or dislike them, doesn't matter. You become more invested in watching them fight because you've learned something about them.
I mean, Jimmy, he lost two of his siblings. I never knew that.
I didn't
even know that.
Yeah.
I mean, and look what he's doing, man. He really is making his whole family proud. He looks like he looks like a really nice kid, you know. Look at that fucking hair this guy has. Look at it, Jimmy.
It's an incredible head of hair.
Do I sound jealous of his hair?
Oh, you sound complimentary. You're not.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Looking for some amazing TV to stream? Indulge yourself with the hits on Hulu you can't miss. Dive in with Barney, Ted, Robin, and the gang on How I Met Your Mother. All 9 seasons are now streaming on Hulu. Then you can move to Modern Family, Schitt's Creek, and My Wife and Kids. We're talking every episode and every season of these shows. We're talking huge hits, streaming on Hulu whenever you're in the mood. Now we're talking.
No.
I can cut some off and send it to you if you like.
Dan, how you been, man? How are you, dude? I haven't seen you in a minute. That's a long time. That's how the kids call it.
Yeah. How are things with you?
Things are good, man. Things are good. I mean, we're in a fucking quarantine. Tell me a day in the life for Dan Hardy in quarantine.
Yeah, where are you?
I'm in England. I'm home in England. I live in a small village in the Midlands, so it's quiet around here anyway, so it doesn't feel too different, to be honest. And I'm pretty antisocial. I like to stay at home, so I don't mind it too much.
You're antisocial. I didn't get that vibe when I hung out with you a fucking decade ago when you fought GSP. Jimmy Norton, do you know that this man went 5 rounds with GSP in his prime?
I do.
Okay. I just want the world to know. Because, we all know. You know, this is a radio thing. The new kids who are watching UFC, like, oh, the guy with the funny hair who does, he's really good as an analyst. But they don't know that Dan Hardy's a fucking beast.
Yeah, but, maybe they do. You knocked him out. And I'll tell you something else as well. There's a reason I managed to go 5 rounds with him, and that was the training I did with you, my friend. Those sessions that we did on the mats in your school prepared me for those 5 rounds better than anything else.
Oh, that's just, I love that plug. I wish my schools were running. I'd fucking run with that. Yeah, man, we had some, hey, listen, we had a good time though. We really did. You came down with a few of your buddies, and we had a good time. Me, you, Longo, we had some laughs, you know?
Yeah, we did. We did. And it was exactly what I needed because, you know, morale was kind of low at the time. I just lost my grandfather and it was just me and two other people out there. So we kind of felt a little bit isolated. And then we got connected up with you guys and you brought us in like family and really helped me out.
Now, I thought you were living in Las Vegas or on the West Coast somewhere. Where were you living? When did you move back?
I was in California for a while and then I moved to Vegas. And then, around my last fight, probably about 6 months after my last fight, which was, I mean, what's nearly 7 years ago now, maybe even 7 years ago. I moved back to the UK. And I've been here ever since. I bought an old church building, and I'm just kind of working on it and slowly building on it. And I've got a wicked gym in this place. It's awesome.
Yeah. So what happened? You were homesick or you just missed the fucking gloom of the UK? LA was, I mean, West Coast was too sunshine and fucking, what happened? You missed home? Why'd you leave?
You know what? I loved it. I always did. I do love California and I will live there again at some point for a period of time. And Vegas as well was a lot of fun. But you know what it's like. Family's the most important. And right now, I could be at my parents' house in 30 minutes. Same with my sister and my grandparents. So it's plus, you know, I'll be honest. I like the UK. I like the climate here. I like the I'm working for the UK for the UFC in Europe most of the time as well. So yeah. Saves a lot of air travel.
You're great behind the mic too. You must like a lot of guys that are fighting have no idea what they're gonna do. For you, it just seems to be kind of a natural progression, and you still get to be around it, and it's still kind of your life. That's gotta feel good.
Well, I've always had too much to say for myself. I think that's always helped. And I've never been particularly talented at anything when it comes to martial arts. So I've always had to learn everything. I've always had to go through each step and learn every technique, you know, make sure it was correct. Otherwise, it just wouldn't work for me. Like, you know, one of my teammates, Paul Daly, had wicked power in his hands, you know, it almost seemed effortless for him to knock people out. Whereas I had to make sure my timing was right, my technique was right. So I think I was just able to kind of, you know, learn the mechanics of things, and that's transferred quite well. And plus, you know, I'm a huge MMA fan. You know, I just love learning, so it's easy for me to be obsessive about, you know, a fighter or a fight card, or you know, if I'm researching for Inside the Octagon, to spend a couple of days just watching two fighters and how they're going to face off. I mean, that's the dream job for me.
Now, I'm sorry, Jimmy. At 37, you're not old by any means. You know, there was talk about you possibly having one more. I know you. I remember hearing that. Were you saying that somewhere? Is that talk done? Because I know you had a little bit of health issues. I don't know exactly what it was. Something with your heart. Is any more talk about coming back, or you're just done with that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm always kind of ticking over. I'm always training, and it never leaves that itch to fight. I don't know how you feel, Matt, but it never leaves. I you know. Every time I'm sitting octagon side watching these guys, part of me is a little bit jealous because I'd love to be in there experiencing that adrenaline rush again. You know, and if the time's right and the opponent's right, then at some point I would step back in there. I'd have to make sure I was prepared for it though, and I need to pick up my training a little bit more. But there are too many things going on at the moment. Towards the end of last year, when I was trying to get some consistent training together, I was at most events, and then this year started, I had two events to go to, one over in New Zealand, one in Brazil, and then lockdown started. So I'm just kind of ticking over at home now.
What else do you do? You said you bought a building. Oh, sorry, Matt. You bought a building. What are you doing with it, and what are you going to do inside the what is the building for?
Well, it's an old church building. It was built in 1895. So it's, you know, I mean, when I moved in, it had the original roof on it with, you know, no insulation. It was just slate tiles on wood. So I've had to do a lot of work just to kind of update it, you know, but it's getting to the stage where I can start, you know, converting the loft. I've installed a gym in one side of the building. So like anyone that follows me on Instagram can see me working out in my gym, hitting my bag. That's in my house. I had a big training rig built in my house. This is my office, which I'm not sure whether you can see is full of Lego.
Oh, Oh, you're a Lego guy.
I just bought one for the first time in years about a week ago because I might want to do a Lego. Which are you? Is that something you're? Is like a hobby of yours?
I've had Lego for every birthday and Christmas since I was probably 5 years old. The Lego shit behind me, I've got one behind me with red sails. That was the first one I got. I got that one for Christmas when I was five, and I've just collected ever since.
Now this is fascinating to me. Tell me about now. I had a big imagination as a kid. I'm kind of still a big kid. What is it with the Legos? Is it like a puzzle? Like, is it like somebody gets a you get a
satisfaction.
Satisfaction. Notice why, Dan Hardy, this is why I'm a podcast guy, not an analyst, motherfucker. But listen, you get like the same satisfaction as somebody doing a fucking puzzle? Or what? I don't understand. What is the thing with the Legos?
I don't know. I think it's different for a lot of people. For me, it was. I mean, when I was a kid, I've got a great imagination, so I was able to create things. I was able to kind of, you know, work out ideas in my head. With the bricks. I mean, they kind of give you, you know, unlimited flexibility. And then they've got like the pirate sets and the castle sets and, you know, all the city sets. You can, you know, so no matter what you like, you can buy something that you can build yourself. There's definitely a satisfaction to completing a set, and some, you know, I mean, they get more and more challenging. I've got one in the other room at the moment that needs doing, which is the Millennium Falcon from Hog. And that is, I mean, that's the biggest Lego set ever
made.
How
many pieces?
It's about seven. I think that's about 7,000 pieces.
Wow.
Which is that's a lot. I mean, that's $1,000 set. That is. It's going to take me a while to build.
It seems like work to me. I look at a puzzle and like a big puzzle with all the million, and you put it together and it gets a picture. The fuck, really? This piece, fuck off!
Puzzles are different.
Kind of puzzle I like to do. How to get out of the fucking lockdown? And I don't know.
I hear what you're saying. I used to use it in training camp because it used to help me relax. Like if my brain was racing, I couldn't sleep. Like to get a Lego set out and just build it. Like the methodical process of going through the instructions and, you know, step by step, putting it together. I always find it quite relaxing.
Them apart?
Accumulation, which I'm working through during lockdown.
Do you ever take them apart and build other stuff out of just like two or three combined sets?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I've got a few sets that I'm building up that I had from childhood. I'm building some castles today, actually. So I'm putting them together today so I could display them. But I've got a few sets I'll keep built and display, but then a lot of other sets that are just in pieces that. Yeah, because, you know, I have friends who have got kids. They can come over and rummage through and build what they like.
Them touch your stuff. Okay, that's nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, some of it. Let's not be crazy.
Jimmy, not that you goof on me, but I think you kind of snickered about my love of Star Wars, Marvel movies, and comic books. Why don't you fuck with Dan Hardy with his love of Legos?
Because
yes! Hey, motherfucker! Look at this!
Yes!
Oh, Jimmy!
Listen,
what do you got?
I like the first three Star Wars. After that, I can't stand it. But I just bought a Harry Potter fucking Lego, and I've never seen the movies. That's how bored I am. I went and bought a Harry Potter Lego castle just to have something to do.
All right, listen, fuck Legos for a second. You like Star Wars or no? Is that the you like
fuck
Star
Legos.
Wars? You ever watch Mandalorian?
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
You watched Mandalorian?
Absolutely. I didn't realize you were talking to me because that's a foregone conclusion. It's Star Wars. Of course I've watched Mandalorian. I've watched it twice. I've got all the Lego sets that have already been released. over it.
Hey, how great was that episode with his buddy, Jimmy's buddy, Bill Burr? How great was that episode?
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. And it's, you know what it's nice to see as well is, you know, these new Star Wars films coming out. A lot of the people that are having cameos in them, like Bill, are huge Star Wars fans. I mean, you know, imagine getting the call up and them saying, hey, do you want to be in one of these Mandalorian episodes? I'd be like, sign me up. Yeah, absolutely.
I should have started with all this. Holy fuck. I hope you have some time. Listen, the Last Jedi, yay or nay with the Last Jedi? You know the one where with Luke dying at the fucking thing and he's not really there?
Thanks, Matt.
Oh, fuck, Jimmy. Well, you don't even know what a fucking Ewok is. You don't watch anything. How dare you?
But listen, I hated the Ewoks. That turned me against the whole franchise. I was like, I can't watch
it. It was age-appropriate for me. I was little. I'm like, oh, look at little Wicket. Look at. Anyway, I like the little song at the end. Did you like The Last Jedi? Out of the new movies, The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, and The Rise of the Skywalker, thoughts, Dan Hardy?
You know, I've enjoyed all of them. I'll be honest. I've enjoyed all of the and what I would expect from a, you know, from something Disney is the production is awesome. I've been back and I've watched all of the Star Wars in this lockdown, and you know, I like the original trilogy obviously because there's something romantic about it. You know, there's a romanticism about watching them, and you know, I watched them back and I've been watching them, you know, with my girlfriend, and she's kind of watching them thinking, "Eh, these aren't very good," to be honest, but. Like the nostalgia is what we love about those movies, I think. If you compare them to the new ones, you know, they're not as watchable, I don't think. But then it was when they went back and did 1, 2, and 3. That was where they lost me a bit. I didn't like those three. But then I got back on board with the newer stuff that's come out.
You didn't like when they took the old Darth Vader who looked like Donald Pleasance. You didn't like when they replaced him with the good looking young one when Lucas took out the original Darth Vader and then put the young handsome one. I hated him for that too. The original three, like the new three with Jar Jar Binks and they were terrible.
Didn't like
they were terrible. The only saving grace is the fight scene with Qui-Gon and fucking. And Obi-Wan versus Darth Maul. Darth Maul was money. They brought it back in the Clone Wars, but that's a cartoon. Let's not get too I'm gonna lose a lot of fans. But listen to me. The Last Jedi, I want to right now, this is not the view of the UFC or anybody involved in the entertainment business with us. And this is not Jimmy's view. But can I give a big fuck you to Rian Johnson for fucking up the whole new trilogy? J.J. Abrams should have kept that thing from the get-go. Force Awakens was fun. Rian Johnson comes in, Mr. Motherfucking Looper, which was great. I love Looper. I was excited for him to do this. Takes a shit on everything that J.J. Abrams did in the prior film. Gets rid of the mask. Oh, it's childish. Let's get rid of Snoke. He's nobody. Oh, Rey, you have no real background. You're a nobody. And then... Luke Skywalker, the most beloved, you know, arguably one of the most beloved, iconic, heroic figures, Jedi Knight. He's going to murder his nephew in his sleep because he's worried about what... Oh, yeah, let me explain that to Leia and Han, you asshole. Fucking Rian Johnson. Dan Hardy, I'm going to blame this on the mugs. I don't know what it is, but I'm upset. He fucking killed Luke. Luke could have went out like a space samurai. But instead, we get that little, he wasn't there. He doesn't have the footprints in the sand. Oh, fuck you, man. He dies on a rock meditating.
How come none of those guys die of disease?
He dies on a rock meditating.
None of those guys get diabetes or cancer. How come nobody in the Star Wars universe just gets a disease like everybody else?
He took a shit on everything he did, Jimmy. And then, listen, The Rise of the Skywalker... I enjoyed it. It was almost like a fucking fan film. They made it fun and whatever. He had to unfuck himself from Rian Johnson. But anyway, how did you get into analyst work? I'm not great at segues.
Oh, beautiful. I'm gonna watch those movies back later with your mouth. Yeah.
You're okay with that though, Dan? You're okay with him taking out Luke Skywalker on that fucking rock and not being there himself?
I just try not to get too invested in these things these days. I enjoy them for what they are. Half of the time, I'm shopping for Lego when I'm watching them as well because I'm like, I need that set. You know, so.
You're trying to say I get too worked up.
He's saying you're too angry about it. Yeah, he just likes to play with Lego and enjoy a good movie.
Can I do? I will say this though: The Mandalorian. Let's leave it on a good note with the Star Wars. Jon Favreau. What's the other guy that made the fucking thing? He made the Clone Wars cartoon and stuff. What's his name? He's like partners with him in it. Oh, man. I feel bad.
I haven't seen that. Good.
But he's part of... I'm going to get it. People are going to DM me and say...
Kylo Ren?
No, stop it. No, he's one of the directors. Oh. He's one of the guys, the creators of the Mandalorian.
I hate him as a bad guy, by the way. Kylo Ren. Fucking daddy issues.
Yeah, he had daddy issues. Han Solo, what a shitty-ass father. He took off. He took off with his buddy Chewbacca. Let's get out of here, man. Let's go run some fucking illegal shit. What the fuck? I don't know. Star Wars is great. I love Star Wars. But The Mandalorian does bring it back to that nostalgic feel and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, Dan, how did you get into analyst work? That's a good question.
Yes. How did you?
It was Dana White came up to me. I'd been into the old UFC offices on Sahara in Vegas. I just went in to have a catch up with Lorenzo because he wanted to see how I was doing after being pulled from the fight, how my health was, and all that kind of stuff. And as I was leaving, Dana pulled up and in a big stretch Monster Energy drinks Hummer, as you would imagine Dana would, and jumped out. And he was like, "I've got an idea. I want you to move back to the UK and work commentary." So basically, it was like Dana took a big gamble on me. I'll always be thankful for it. Just kind of thought, well, he's got a big mouth. He seems to be able to speak fairly well for himself. Let's see how he does in this role. And I did one trial run when, who was it? Ronda Rousey fought Sarah McMahon. Daniel Cormier fought Patrick Cummins. I was Octagon side for that, doing like a test run. And then the next event was UFC London. And that was it. I'd never done any commentary before. My first event was UFC London.
Was it nerve-wracking your first time? Like, how much do I say? When do I just let them fight? Like, was it hard to get that rhythm down of when to say something and when not to?
It was a little bit. Yeah, I mean, this challenge is always how you work with your co-commentator. And I was very fortunate. I got John Gooden. I'd done a couple of screen tests with a couple of guys, but John Gooden and I just clicked. The challenge is, obviously, you're not sitting facing each other when you're talking. You're having a conversation, both staring right at the same thing. So you can have a tendency to talk over one another and those kind of things. Plus, keeping an eye on the actual schedule. I mean, anybody that's worked behind the scenes of the UFC knows how well organized and timed everything is. Like, there are certain points where I have to basically shut my mouth because there's other stuff that needs to be going on. Adverts, commercials. We need to hear what the corner team is saying. John's got to say something particular about something. There's loads going on. So you have to kind of tune in and get used to, having a few streams of thought. As well as watching the fights, you've got someone talking in your brain. You're trying to pay attention to what your co-commentator's saying. It was a challenge. But the thing is, I always make a joke out of this, but it is true. I got knocked out live on TV at the O2 Arena, co-main event in London. What's the worst that's going to happen now? I'm going to say something stupid, I'm going to trip up the octagon and headbutt the corner post. It doesn't matter anymore. People have already seen my mohawk waving side to side and me falling asleep on the canvas.
So funny. It's so funny, Jimmy. As you say that, before I checked my, I was checking my iPhone, and on the UFC page, it's me getting knocked out by Shoni Carter with a back fist. It happened 20 fucking years ago, you assholes. But it's so funny. It's very freeing, Jimmy, when it gives you such an I don't give an F attitude when everybody's seen you at your most vulnerable and at your worst. It is really like, what else could you do to me? I don't look at that. Is that embarrassing? Yes. You know what I mean? But like, so it is amazing when it does give you that outlook. I feel like that a lot when I'm doing the Dana White looking for a fight, when they have something for us to do, riding a bull, doing this and that. I'm like, dude, I've done it all, man. Everything else, like after fighting in the cage, doesn't seem that scary. Right, Dan?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think when you fall from such a great height, other things don't seem quite as high when you're going to fall, I'm going to go back and watch that fight again, because I remember watching that fight around the time it happened. I don't think I watched it live, but I remember watching you hit the canvas and you still had a look at an expression of like consciousness on your face, like you were aware of what had happened, like looked up at him like, like he was so close.
Yeah, it was so tough. If you watch it, just, what you do? Don't watch the last 20 seconds. talk about tripping at the finish line. Listen, it happens, and I'll tell you the tunnel vision I had in there, how exhausted I was with my very first UFC fight, and then just not having a fight go past the first round. Back in the day, Dan, there was no way to get like experience. So I had 8 like fights locally. They stuck me on these little cards. Well, I would just take guys down and smoke them like a joint. They didn't know any jiu-jitsu. So even the toughest guys, who were like some judo guys or sambo guys, I'd still take them out. So I'm fighting a Shoni Carter, who's not the best guy, but he had such experience. How was your very first – do you remember your first time fighting in the octagon, and how did that feel?
Yeah, it was UFC 89. I was fighting Akihiro Gono. So the good thing was I knew exactly who I was fighting because he was an old Pride veteran. You know, he already had wins over like Hector Lombard and Gegard Mousasi. So I was aware of him. I was, you know, and I always preferred, you know, in MMA it works the same. Better the devil you know. I'd much rather be fighting a guy I know is tough than be fighting John Jones making his UFC debut and I've never heard of the guy before. You know, I'd much rather. So I was quite glad I knew who I was fighting and I respected him. I knew what he was capable of. The weird thing was, every fight leading up to the UFC, I remember feeling those nerves, those like, oh, like, why am I doing this moments? And, you know, well, this is the last time, I'm never doing this again, kind of conversations going on in my head. The first time that didn't happen was my UFC debut. And I think that the reason in hindsight is because my goal was always to get to the UFC. I always wanted to step into the octagon, and when I was behind the curtain, ready to make that first walk, it was like I'd already achieved my goal. Like I'd arrived. Like this was, you know, the thing is, I needed to readdress my goals and set them a little bit higher after that point because I'd already achieved that one. My goal was to get to the UFC, and once I was there, I enjoyed that moment, that process. I was fortunate enough to get the win, and then after that event, I remember driving home thinking to myself, okay, that was a weird experience, but I need to refocus now and start thinking about the world title.
It's funny how even with a bunch of fights, each fight is its own unique experience. Whether it's from the camp you put in to just where it is, the walkout, it's familiar, but it's different all the same. If that makes any kind of sense, Dan. No.
Yeah, absolutely. I can, and I've got a lot of my fights on video. When I go back and watch them. And I've got the same thing with old playlists as well, because music was always a big part of my training camps. I always used to have like particular playlists I would listen to during training camp, and it would kind of anchor memories in those songs. So like there are certain playlists that I can put on now that will take me back to my time fighting in Japan. And I remember sitting on the bus with those little white, you know, like bits of paper on the back of the seats, and everyone's asleep around me, and I've got this music playing in my head. I'm looking at Tokyo as I'm driving to the airport. You know, it brings up a lot of those memories.
How did you get? I'm sorry, Jimmy. I was going to ask how you got into the listen. What it's the listen?
Listen,
podcast.
Yes, but that's what I was going to mention. Him and Mark Goddard. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was. I think he's refereed about 14 of my fights, and he's always got a lot to say for himself. He's a very smart, intelligent guy, and it makes sense for us to record some of the conversations we have because they're fascinating. And plus, I kind of like winding Mark up a little bit. I like teasing him and, you know, getting him a bit agitated because he's very entertaining when he's angry.
All right. Well, listen, it's always good talking to you. And the podcast, just so people know, is called Listen with Dan Hardy and Mark Goddard. And, you know, thanks for coming on. It's always always good to hear you. And you're really such a great announcer. I mean, it's definitely you're in the right place.
I'm so happy for you, Dan. As you know, Dan Hardy, there's a lot of tragedies in this fucking sport. Guys, after they're done fighting, you don't hear from them. It's not great for them. You're one of the guys that, you know, I'm proud of, if that sounds weird.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. You played a part in that, and I'll be forever grateful for it.
Thanks so much, Dan. All our best, brother.
Good talking to you, Dan. Thank you to Charles Rosa, and thank you so much to Dan Hardy. This was a fun one.
It really was, Jimmy. And you're right. Spock might not be great in bed. Who knows? Well, that was me who said that.
You said that. I said he's probably terrific.
Yeah. Agree to disagree. And can I just say for the record, satisfied's a pretty – it's an easy word. I said –
satisfied. Satisfied. You got it.
It's a very easy word, Jimmy. Sometimes my mind goes places. And what did I say? Satisfied, no?
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
It's a simple word. I'm not a moron, is what I'm telling you. I was just,
not at all.
My mind goes places and it comes back. Jimmy, I'm so happy we do this. What do you want to plug? Where are you going to be this weekend?
I'm going to be in the house at the table. You can go to youtube.com/Chip Chipperson. There are two new Chip podcasts up for anybody that cares. Any of my dates, go to my website. They've been rescheduled. And I'm sure I'll talk to you before the weekend, Matt.
Definitely, Jimmy. Talk to you soon, buddy. Good times,
yes.
Pal.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Charles. And I'll see you soon.
Later, pal.
All right, pal.
Bye, everybody.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.